Hey, nerds. I know, I haven't been around as much lately, and there are plenty of unread opinions just sitting there in my inbox wondering when I'm going to get around to reading them to you. But my daughter came home from grad school to visit us for spring break last week, and I promised to spend every waking moment with her, and I did, and it was fabulous. But I also have a lot of day job stuff going on, and on top of all of that, I follow the Trump cases very closely because of my research being closely tied to them, and because I give a lot of guest lectures specifically about the Trump cases from a political science perspective. Now you know why I read so many of the filings related to those cases on the show. That being said, I cannot let another day go by without reading one of the special prosecutor's filings in response to one of Judge Cannon's recent orders in the documents case, because it is every bit as delicious as Cannon's order was absolutely flabbergasting and absurd. If you haven't heard about Judge Cannon's order, go ahead and put me on pause and give it a quick Google before you listen to this episode. And if you want to know a little bit more about the Presidential Records Act, I have also included a link to a quick explainer video about the Presidential Records Act from one of my lectures. So I'm going to paste a link to that in the show description for you. Please know that these cases have gone beyond ideology and opinion. So I won't be walking on eggshells anymore when it comes to explaining why I'm reading filings and documents from Trump cases on a show that is called What SCOTUS Wrote Us. Just going forward, pretend that there is an invisible asterisk following the show's title that says, also important documents related to the Trump cases. In fact, more of you listen to the Trump document episodes than any Supreme Court opinions that I read on the show. So there you have it. And now, without further delay, I give you one of the juiciest legal filings to come out of the Trump cases so far. Special Prosecutor Jack Smith's response to Judge Eileen Cannon's order requiring preliminary proposed jury instructions and verdict forms on counts 1 through 32 in the classified documents case. Enjoy. The court has issued an order directing the parties to file preliminary proposed jury instructions and verdict forms for counts 1 through 32 of the superseding indictment, with a specific requirement that the parties engage with two competing scenarios and offer alternative draft text that assumes each scenario to be a correct formulation of the law to be issued to the jury. Both scenarios rest on an unstated and fundamentally flawed legal premise, namely that the Presidential Records Act, or PRA, and in particular its distinction between personal and presidential records, determines whether a former president is authorized under the Espionage Act to possess highly classified documents and store them in an unsecure facility, despite contrary rules in Executive Order 13526, which governs the possession and storage of classified information. That legal premise is wrong, and a jury instruction for Section 793 that reflects that premise would distort the trial. The PRA's distinction between personal and presidential records has no bearing on whether a former president's possession of documents containing national defense information is authorized under the Espionage Act, and the PRA should play no role in the jury instructions on the elements of Section 793. Indeed, based on the current record, the PRA should not play any role at trial at all. Moreover, it is vitally important that the court promptly decide whether the unstated legal premise underlying the recent order does, in the court's view, represent a correct formulation of the law. If the court wrongly concludes that it does, and that it intends to include the PRA in the jury instructions regarding what is authorized under Section 793, it must inform the parties of that decision well in advance of trial. The government must have the opportunity to consider appellate review well before jeopardy attaches. The adoption of a clearly erroneous jury instruction that entails a high probability of failure of a prosecution, a failure the government could not then seek to remedy by appeal or otherwise, constitutes the kind of extraordinary situation in which we are empowered to issue the writ of mandamus. Courts have permitted the government to obtain writs of mandamus when a proposed criminal jury instruction clearly violated the law, risked prejudicing the government at trial with jeopardy attached, and provided the government no other avenue of appeal. If, for example, the court concludes, as posited in Scenario A in the court's order, that under the Espionage Act, a former president is authorized to possess any document that the jury determines qualifies as a personal record as defined by the PRA, that would wrongly present to the jury a factual determination that should have no legal consequence under the elements of Section 793. Likewise, if the court concludes, as posited in Scenario B, that a president has carte blanche to remove any document from the White House at the end of his presidency, that any document so removed must be treated as a personal record under the PRA, as an unreviewable matter of law, and that also as a matter of law, a former president is forever authorized to possess such a document regardless of how highly classified it may be and how it is stored, that would constitute a clearly erroneous jury instruction that entails a high probability of failure of a prosecution, and the government must be provided with an opportunity to seek prompt appellate review. As in any case, the court may defer ruling on certain aspects of jury instructions where the applicability or non-applicability of the instructions turns on the evidence that is presented at trial. For example, whether the jury should be instructed on how to evaluate law enforcement testimony or how to evaluate expert witness testimony will turn on whether such witnesses actually testify at trial. Such decisions can obviously be deferred. But the question of whether the PRA has an impact on the element of unauthorized possession under Section 793E does not turn on any evidentiary issue, and it cannot be deferred. It is purely a question of law that must be decided promptly. If the court were to defer a decision on that fundamental legal question, it would inject substantial delay into the trial, and worse, prevent the government from seeking review before jeopardy attaches. The court must not defer ruling on a pretrial motion if the deferral will adversely affect a party's right to appeal. As instructed by the court, the government below provides a clear and well-supported jury instruction for the elements of Section 793E. The proposed instruction correctly instructs the jury that the element of unauthorized possession depends on the plain language of the statute, Executive Order 13526, and the executive orders implementing regulations, and it makes no mention of purported designations under the PRA. As required by the court's order, the government also provides proposed jury instructions that incorporate the inaccurate legal premises reflected in the court's order under Scenario A and Scenario B. Furthermore, even though resolution of the threshold legal question is purely a matter of law, the court should be aware at the outset that Trump's entire effort to rely on the PRA is not based on any facts. It is a post hoc justification that was concocted more than a year after he left the White House, and his invocation in this court of the PRA is not grounded in any decision he actually made during his presidency to designate as personal any of the records charged in the superseding indictment. Accordingly, before turning to the jury instructions, the government below provides the court with the factual context surrounding Trump's attempt to inject the PRA into these proceedings. Importantly, Trump has never represented to this court that he, in fact, designated the classified documents as personal. He made no such claim in his motion to dismiss, in his reply, or at the hearing on March 14, 2024, despite every opportunity and every incentive to do so. As discussed below, the reason is simple. He never did so. Instead, he has attempted to fashion out of whole cloth a legal presumption that would operate untethered to any facts, without regard to his actual decisions, his actual intent, the unambiguous definition of what constitutes personal records under the PRA, or the plainly non-personal content of the highly classified documents that he retained. There is no basis in law or fact for that legal presumption, and the court should reject Trump's effort to invent one as a vehicle to inject the PRA into this case. Background. As the government has previously explained, there is no colorable argument that any of the documents charged in the superseding indictment is a personal record under the PRA, i.e., a document of a purely private or non-public character, which does not relate to or have an effect upon the carrying out of the constitutional, statutory, or other official or ceremonial duties of the president. To the contrary, the classified documents charged in the superseding indictment were all created or received by the president in the course of conducting activities which relate to or have an effect upon the carrying out of the constitutional, statutory, or other official or ceremonial duties of the president, making them straightforward presidential records. Trump has not argued otherwise. Indeed, it would be pure fiction to suggest that highly classified documents created by members of the intelligence community and military and presented to the President of the United States during his term in office were purely private and that they do not relate to or have an effect upon the carrying out of the constitutional, statutory, or other official or ceremonial duties of the president. Trump has nevertheless sought to inject the PRA into the trial of this case by suggesting that he may have designated the documents as personal shortly before his term of office ended. That if he did so, such a designation would be impervious to subsequent judicial review, and that his possession of any documents he designated as personal under the PRA was authorized for purposes of the Espionage Act, even if contrary to Executive Order 13526. As the government has explained, those contentions are both meritless and fatally undermined by Trump's concession that the Department of Justice may seek to recover such documents in a civil suit, in which a court would be perfectly free to determine whether a particular contested record was personal or presidential. Moreover, Trump has never suggested that he in fact designated the documents at issue as personal, but has instead sought to convert a statement made during oral argument in Judicial Watch, Inc. v. NARA, 2012, into a legal rule that treats the mere act of transferring documents from the White House to anywhere other than the National Archives and Records Administration, or NARA, as indistinguishable from a considered decision to designate the records as personal. The government addressed that claim in response to Trump's Rule 12 motion. But here, in the context of jury instructions, the government provides the court with the factual backdrop showing that the very notion that Trump could benefit from a purported designation under the PRA was invented long after he left the White House. A. Trump did not designate the documents as personal while in office. During its exhaustive investigation, the government interviewed Trump's own PRA representatives and numerous high-ranking officials from the White House, chiefs of staff, White House counsel, and senior members of the White House counsel's office, a national security advisor, and senior members of the National Security Council. Not a single one had heard Trump say that he was designating records as personal, or that at the time he caused the transfer of boxes to Mar-a-Lago, he believed that his removal of records amounted to designating them as personal under the PRA. To the contrary, every witness who was asked this question had never heard such a thing. Some of the clearest evidence that Trump did not designate the documents charged in the superseding indictment as personal while in office comes from Trump's own statements and those of his PRA representatives during the year that followed his departure from office. For example, during nearly a year of correspondence with NARA regarding the return of the boxes taken from the White House, neither Trump nor any of his representatives suggested that Trump had designated all of the records as personal, either deliberately, implicitly, presumptively, or otherwise. To the contrary, everyone involved in this back and forth agreed that there were presidential records that had been taken to Mar-a-Lago that needed to be located and returned to NARA. Likewise, in his off-the-record interview with a writer and publicist on July 21, 2021, Trump himself never suggested that the classified documents he revealed to them were personal or that he was free to do with them whatever he chose. Instead, he said that they were highly confidential and remained classified, despite the fact that he had removed them from the White House and taken them to his personal residence. Later, after Trump provided 15 boxes to NARA, the archivist of the United States advised Congress in a letter released to the public on February 18, 2022, that NARA had identified items marked as classified national security information within the boxes and therefore had been in communication with the Department of Justice. Trump released a public statement in response the same day, stating that the National Archives did not find anything. They were given, upon request, presidential records in an ordinary and routine process to ensure the preservation of my legacy and in accordance with the Presidential Records Act. These were Trump's own words, and there is no hint that he considered the documents to be anything other than presidential records. B. The notion that Trump might have designated the documents as personal was first invented in February 2022. On February 7, 2022, The Washington Post reported that in January, NARA had retrieved 15 boxes of documents and other items from former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence because the material should have been turned over to the agency when he left the White House. That article quoted a statement by the archivist noting, quote, the Presidential Records Act is critical to our democracy, in which the government is held accountable by the people, unquote. At that point, the public reporting related only to Trump's non-compliance with the PRA. The fact that he had retained highly classified materials did not become public for several days. On February 8, 2022, the day after the Washington Post article was published, the president of Judicial Watch posted the following two statements on Twitter. Fact check. The left media is being dishonest about the Trump records issue. A president has discretion on what docs to retain as presidential records while in office. So the law allows Trump to tear up documents, shred them, and take documents when he left the White House. Fun story. At Judicial Watch sued over Bill Clinton's hiding records in his sock drawer. Court told us to pound sand because presidents essentially can do whatever they want with their records. Remember this when you hear anti-Trump media caterwauling about his tearing up documents. Immediately after posting the second tweet, the Judicial Watch president sent to an employee in Trump's post-presidency office a link to the tweet and offered to discuss the issue with Trump. A few hours later, the Judicial Watch president sent the same person his analysis of the case Judicial Watch v. NARA 2012. That evening, the Judicial Watch president circulated to the employee a proposed public statement for Trump's consideration, which included language that the PRA and judicial decisions gave Trump the right to keep the documents he returned to NARA. The statement was never issued. Around this same time, the Judicial Watch president, who was not an attorney, told another Trump employee that Trump was being given bad advice and that the records Trump possessed at Mar-a-Lago should have been characterized as personal. The second employee advised the Judicial Watch president that they disagreed with the Judicial Watch president's analysis. In the case, Judicial Watch, former President Clinton had made the designation of certain records personal while president, whereas Trump had not done so. The second employee further informed Trump that the Judicial Watch president was wrong and explained why. Nevertheless, on February 10, 2022, Trump released a statement claiming in part, quote, I have been told I was under no obligation to give the material based on various legal rulings that have been made over the years, unquote. Before this time, the second employee had never heard this theory from Trump. No other witness recalled Trump espousing this theory until after the Judicial Watch president conveyed it to him in February 2022. C. Trump and his attorneys nevertheless continued to acknowledge that the documents were presidential, not personal, records. Even after the February 2022 discussions with the Judicial Watch president, Trump and his attorneys continued to acknowledge that the classified records at issue in this case were presidential rather than personal. For example, in May 2022, Trump's former attorney accepted service of a grand jury subpoena requiring Trump's post-presidency office to produce any documents with classification markings in its or the former president's custody. Trump did not seek to quash the subpoena or argue in any way that he did not have to comply because he had designated any classified records as personal under the PRA. Instead, he hid most of those documents from his lawyer, made false statements to mask his continued possession of them, and attempted to enlist his lawyer in concealing or destroying the classified records. Around the same time, Trump's former attorney sent the government a letter setting out, among other things, some legal theories related to the government's investigation. Trump's counsel requested that the government include the letter, quote, on any application made in connection with any investigative request concerning this investigation, unquote. And the government duly attached it to the affidavit in support of the warrant to search Mar-a-Lago. Moreover, in the letter, Trump's former attorney further characterized any documents with classification markings at Mar-a-Lago as follows. Quote, there have been public reports about an investigation by DOJ into presidential records purportedly marked as classified among materials that were once in the White House and unknowingly included among the boxes brought to Mar-a-Lago by the movers, unquote. Those were the words of Trump's counsel directly addressing the classified documents at issue in this case. The fictional PRA defense was nowhere to be found. Trump's attorneys took a similar approach in litigation after the execution of the search warrant at Mar-a-Lago. For example, in a September 1, 2022 hearing before this court, Trump's counsel repeatedly described the records at issue as presidential. And he made those representations to the court not only orally, but in writing. In Trump's reply filed the day before that hearing, he quoted the definition of personal records under the PRA and distinguished presidential records from documents containing, quote, highly personal information such as diaries, journals, and medical records, unquote. The items he identified as personal were plainly not classified documents, and nowhere did he suggest that the classified documents at issue in this case had been designated personal. The implausibility of Trump's fiction was also readily apparent to the 11th Circuit, which also distinguished personal items like medical documents, correspondence related to taxes and accounting information from the highly classified documents at issue in this case. Quote, for our part, we cannot discern why plaintiff would have an individual interest in or need for any of the 100 documents with classification markings. Classified documents are marked to show they are classified, for instance, with their classification level. They are owned by, produced by, or for, or under the control of the United States government, and they include information the unauthorized disclosure of which could reasonably be expected to cause identifiable or describable damage to the national security, unquote. As the 11th Circuit concluded, quote, plaintiff does not have a possessory interest in the documents at issue, so he does not suffer a cognizable harm if the United States reviews documents he neither owns nor has a personal interest in, unquote. On February 22, 2024, more than 3 years after leaving office, Trump advanced the argument to this court that because the superseding indictment alleged that he caused boxes to be transported to Mar-a-Lago, the court should treat that act as equivalent to a considered decision to designate the records as personal, and should further hold that such a designation is both unreviewable in a criminal trial and dispositive of whether he was legally authorized to possess documents containing classified information for purposes of the Espionage Act. The court should reject Trump's post hoc legal invention, and the PRA should play no role in this trial. We've come to the end of this document, but don't worry, we will continue right where we left off next episode. Until then, thanks for listening to What SCOTUS Wrote Us.